This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Thomas Knudsen, the chief executive of Toll Group, the Australian-based logistics firm owned by Japan Post. Thomas, thank you for talking to us. You've been, you know, hired to come on board as the chief executive to turn around the business. And I think that's the key mandate behind your hiring. Let's have a quick sit rep from you in terms of how that plan is going.
First of all, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Well, I think we're tracking well in terms of trying really to live this vision that Japan Post had of Toll initially when they bought Toll, which is to become an Asian logistics company with a strong base in Australia. So what we have been doing over the past couple of years is really to try to strengthen our businesses in Asia, but also continue our growth in Australia, where we have a very strong footprint. Clearly, COVID has been a little bit of a spanner in the wheel in terms of our plans, but we're still very much committed to our vision about growing in Asia. If we look at it from a strategic viewpoint, we still see Asia, and in particular Southeast Asia now, as a core growth area for our business. It's a large consumer market where our focus on retail, fashion, industrials, and healthcare is well positioned. So we see a strong business story and growth opportunity in Southeast Asia and the wider Asian context.
Yeah, Thomas, it does seem as if to the bystander like myself that your strategy is premised on two parts, yeah? Obviously, the growth is the second part and expansion to Asia is the second part. But the first part addresses rising costs and your debt levels, both of which need to be addressed before growth can realistically be assumed. And I'm going to reference various stories in the press, including from the Australian Financial Review, which suggested that Toll is considering selling two cargo ships it bought last year. And obviously, that will raise cash to help reduce debts. I think the bill at the time when you bought those two ships was about $172 million. How's that plan, if at all, whether it's still alive, in order to try and raise some cash by selling those two boats?
Well, I think specifically for those two ships, we're not going ahead with that. So that was a rumor at the time, but it's not something we are moving ahead with. But that doesn't change the fact that you're right, that we have an Asian growth story. And I don't think you have to say that one is depending on the other. I still think we can grow our business in Asia whilst changing the businesses that needs to be changed. We've clearly identified a number of areas in our business in Australia in particular where we don't see that we are the best owner of those businesses, or we don't necessarily see a strategic fit. So we have exited what we call the heavy haulage business within the mining area. It was an area that we were not able to deliver returns on, and we decided to sell that off. And we will be reviewing our portfolio of businesses to be sure that we deliver on our returns and certainly also focus our attention on Asia. You're right to say that we've been trying to release some cash, and some of that is probably also reflecting back on my past experience. I see logistics as a relatively cash light business where you try to manage with relatively few assets. Some assets are really important for our business, some strategic assets such as Toll City here in Singapore, our Preston's e-commerce facility in Australia. Those are core. We believe that they differentiate us from our competition. But if we're looking at other assets and they are not necessarily differentiating ourselves, there are other ways of operating without necessarily owning it. As you said, that will reduce debt and return improve on our assets. So we're looking at the assets one by one and primarily looking at it from a strategic point of view, saying, do we believe that we are the right owners and it has the right value long term?
Yeah, and obviously what you say has just made sense. But particularly in the light of COVID-19, where businesses all over the world have been affected by the crisis, 1st April, I think you were also reportedly said to have taken a 40% pay cut for the next 6 months till October. You also moved some of your staff to a four-day week, obviously due to the loss of business from big retailers and, you know, obviously the dearth of footfall in retail stores. How bad exactly has it been, or how not bad has it been? And has there been a spike in recovery the last couple of months?
Well, I think most importantly, COVID is a health issue. And I think in broad terms, we have actually navigated that well. So, you know, we've got a lot of employees, more than 40,000 across the world. And we've fortunately not had any significant health issues for any of our employees, which I'm very happy about. We were probably fortunate that we got started early because we have presence in China, and therefore some of the lessons learned in China we were able to implement in other markets. And we have a strong health and safety focus. So from a health point of view, we've generally so far been blessed by a minimal impact. But of course, people have been affected by working from home, or many of our drivers who are meeting with customers and so on are being affected by this. So it is clearly a health concern for our business. If you're talking about the impact on the business itself, it's been a very mixed bag. So some businesses, such as our groceries business that serve the large retailers in Australia, has done well. As you well know, there was a lot of toilet paper being bought for a period, and we certainly benefited from that. At the same time, the retailers, especially within the fashion area, certainly had a very tough period, especially in Australia, but also in Southeast Asia. So it's been a plus and minus in terms of different businesses being impacted. It's probably fair to say that the forwarding business has been, we had expected would be more negatively impacted. So we've actually seen that volumes have come back in the ocean area relatively strong. And if you look at the month of July for Asia, it's actually back at the level where it was last year, where air freight is still a challenge. As I said, within our logistics business, it's a little bit depending on verticals where we've seen it. You might have seen numbers coming out from some of the large global players that have indicated that volumes have been down for the last quarter, in particular within road businesses, but also within freight forwarding. And of course, we are impacted by that. But we are actually still quite optimistic about both our logistics and forwarding businesses being able to meet the budgets by the end of the financial year, which I think would be a huge success in this very difficult environment.
Yeah, and of course, in terms of black swans, they don't come any bigger than COVID-19, but there have also been other black swans, past and present, including, for example, cybersecurity and cyber hacks and things like that. You were hit twice this year, actually, Thomas. I read that the attackers, the Nephilims of this world, you lost a couple of hundred gig of corporate data to the attackers. Now, what's the backstory there? Is it because of the compression on P&L and profits and margins that there has been, I guess, a deficit of investment in IT systems?
Actually, no. We've actually made significant investments in IT over the past 3 years. We've invested more than $400 million into our IT infrastructure. But arguably, we've also come from an area where we've not made sufficient investments in the prior years to that. If you look at it, you'll see that we are certainly not the only ones who've been attacked from a cyber perspective. And the Australian Premier came out a number of weeks ago and spoke to the fact that Australia seemed to be under attack, potentially even from state-sponsored organizations. So we're certainly not alone. We've done a lot to upgrade our infrastructure, but the combination of COVID and the fact that we have close to 20,000 people working from home across the world in 50 countries is certainly an exposure for any business, and it is not easy. And we've seen many other companies being impacted by that. I had the pleasure or displeasure of trying this before with my previous employer, and they had a strong infrastructure in place. But cybercrime has simply exploded over the past couple of years. And I think any business must really start looking at this as a black swan event, but really looking at it as a real business risk and prepare accordingly. It's not enough, and I'm quite passionate about this, it's not enough to only focus on the cybersecurity measures, but it is the entire infrastructure and your ability to resume business and so on that needs to be looked at. So it's the whole IT infrastructure, and there's a big cultural element too. So I think we've made a lot of progress over the last couple of months in that area and strengthened both our technology as well as the cultural side of it. But it's something you have to be aware of and conscious of continuously.
No, yeah, and of course it does remain, is and was one of the biggest black swans. But at the time, you said that you did not know the full financial damage of the hack. It's been now been a couple of months. To what extent did you know the full pecuniary impact of what happened? Not just of the one attack, but of both attacks.
Yeah, so first of all, it is actually quite difficult to see the impact. There are some very obvious direct impacts in terms of additional money spent on external resources to come in and help us with this, building increased IT security and so on. So that's fairly easy to calculate. But obviously, as you can imagine, the bigger part of the impact is potential loss of business, the feedback from customers and so forth. And that's something that is difficult to estimate in short or even medium term. And at the same time, we've had COVID, which has certainly also meant that some of our customers have reduced business overall. So in some cases, it's been hard to say, is this really an impact of the cyber attack, or is this a reflection of COVID and reduced business? But I'll be frank and honest and say that it has had a significant financial impact on the group, and it's certainly something that will have an impact on our results, especially for the first quarter of this year.
I'm talking this morning to Thomas Knudsen, the chief executive of the Australia-based logistics firm Toll Group, which is also owned by Japan Post. Thomas, we'll come back after the break and we'll talk about your owners, Japan Post. We'll talk about the diversification strategy from Australia, and we'll talk about the financial impact of some of your decisions. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
This morning, I'm talking to Thomas Knudsen, the chief executive of Toll Group, which is the Australia-based logistics firm owned by Japan Post. Now, Thomas, 5 years ago, Japan Post, as part of their expansion and growth strategy, paid $6.5 billion for yourselves. But of course, in the subsequent 2 years, losses prompted Japan Post to take a nearly $5 billion write-down. Reportedly now, they're looking for an exit strategy, or at least to be advised on options in terms of their stake in yourselves. Bloomberg reported in June that they had hired Nomura to help advise them. I guess what is happening here is it's quite instructive for international cross-border M&As, as well as for logistics firms like yourselves trying to find a foothold in these very uncertain times. What can you tell us about this transaction, and what can you tell us about the landscape, which keeps changing almost on a weekly basis in your industry?
Yeah, I can't comment on behalf of Japan Post around what their view is in this area. All I can say is Japan Post has earlier communicated that they had not made any decisions about Toll being up for sale, and they've maintained that despite, as you rightly point out, there's been a number of rumors around that. The discussions we are having on the board and the things I'm focusing on is really driving the growth in Asia. Yes, it is an industry where there's a lot of change going on, but it's also still an industry that has tremendous potential. You know, we see ourselves as a primarily Asian-based player with a strong footprint in China and Southeast Asia and certainly also in Malaysia. And we see a potential to grow that further. With COVID, there's been a number of changes in the industry that I see coming through in a strong way. One is the real transition into the business-to-consumer e-commerce market, which was certainly on a path for growth over the past many years, but has certainly been accelerated the past 6 months. And the second part is this transition of sourcing from China into Southeast Asia, whether that's a result of the tensions between the U.S. And China, or in Australia and China for that sake, but we certainly see strong growth in Southeast Asia, and we see ourselves really well positioned to take advantage of that. So I still think that we are very committed. I know we are very committed to Southeast Asia and Asia in general, and to growing our business despite the rumors that you refer to.
Yeah, and of course, Australia as it stands, I think is 3/4 of revenue for yourselves. It is a growth strategy and an appropriate one, given the fact that you are placed in this Asia Pacific region. What kind of headway have you made in terms of diversifying the business into this part of the world? And does it include mergers and acquisitions, or does it include partnerships? And if so, which geographies and which partners?
Yeah, so traditionally, as you correctly point out, we've been an Australian-centric company with about 1/4 of our revenue coming from outside. We're focusing very much on Asia at the moment, and expect that within the next couple of years, we'll see our revenue get close to $2 billion in Asia, which would be a significant growth. We're driving that both through our existing footprint in Asia, where we're present in 12 countries with more than 6,000 people and almost 200 sites across Asia, and I'm excluding Australia from this. So we already have a strong footprint. We have last year entered into a strong joint venture in Indonesia, which we believe gives us a really strong footprint in Indonesia for growth. And we have our own organizations in place in most other Asian countries, and we are reviewing potential openings in a couple of markets where we're not. So it's certainly a geographical expansion in Asia. The second part is really leveraging the capabilities we've built in Australia over the years. We see ourselves as having very strong capabilities within healthcare, within retail, fashion, and industrials. And we believe that we can use those capabilities to grow our footprint across the Asia area. And as you also talked about earlier, we've actually seen that the business has been transitioning into Southeast Asia. And I'm based in Singapore, so I'm not based in Australia. So from a group perspective, we put a number of functions into Singapore to be closer to our markets in Southeast Asia. We've been successfully able to land a number of business in Southeast Asia recently within our global logistics business. And in particular here in Singapore with Tall City, we've really been able to take advantage of the situation the last 6 months within the growth of healthcare. So we're actually seeing Asia as a growth area and hotspot at the moment with plenty of opportunities that we can take advantage of.
I'm talking this morning to Thomas Knudsen, the chief executive of Toll Group, the Australia-based logistics firm owned by Japan Post. Now, some of the growth pockets that you talk about in ASEAN and in Asia, Thomas, obviously very appropriate. But do they contain the same kind of quantums of value and volume that you've grown accustomed to in Australia as a more mature market?
That's a good question. I think we see that Asia, and you have to be careful when you talk about Asia, because we look at Asia as everything from India to Japan, and we've got some very large markets in each of those countries. So it's hard to make one single statement about what the markets are looking like. But we see growth opportunities in most Asian markets. It's fair to say that each market has different requirements. We have a strong focus on safety, and we bring that to the businesses. That's not all customers in markets that value that, but many large international and local companies put a high emphasis on that. So we see that as a differentiator in many markets. And we also see our capabilities and technology and insights from verticals as opportunities. So we still believe from a revenue point of view, Asia overall has significant more potential than Australia just from the sheer size. And we see those growth opportunities as being available to us. But clearly, going from having 75% of our revenue in Australia and 25% in Asia and the rest of the world will take a while before we are able to shift a significant part into Asia, or grow Asia significantly to outpace Australia. So Australia is still very important for us and will remain so for the future.
Well, exactly. And there's two kinds of growth, right? Either you get it organically or you get it inorganically. And if it's inorganically, then you'll need a balance sheet and profit and loss to make that happen. Which route do you prefer taking, Thomas? And if it's the second inorganic route, does that necessarily include a return to the capital markets on the ASX, or which you left some years ago?
Yeah, so we've invested heavily over the past 3 years to the tune of $2 billion, some of it into technology, but also into a lot of assets, as we discussed earlier. The focus for the next 24 months is clearly on taking advantage of those great assets that we have in both Australia, but also here in Singapore. We have Tall City, we have our large facility in Clementi, we have TOPS, which is an oil and gas area, and we have plenty of opportunity to grow those. So it's going to be, over the next 2 years, really pushing more volume and revenue through our existing sites, both in Asia as well as Australia and New Zealand. We will certainly grow businesses if we have opportunities with customers that require new warehouses or investments in transport assets in Asia. We will invest in those. But it is primarily driven by utilizing our current assets better.
Well, fiscal 2021 is the instrumental period for yourselves and the board of directors at Japan Post, which comprises directors from Japan Post. Thomas, when I saw your financial results for the year ending March this year, it was a net loss of about $114 million from a profit of about $11 million a year earlier. What does fiscal 2021 look like? Better, worse, or about the same?
Well, I think it's a little bit early. So we are 3 months into our financial year, and with COVID, there's certainly a lot of uncertainties. But my view is that based on what we see so far now, that financial year 21 is going to be a better year than the past year. Exactly how much we'll have to wait and see. But certainly the signs we've had for the first quarter, especially in our logistics forwarding businesses, have been better than expected. We need to see how that turns out for the rest of the year with the uncertainty that exists. But my view would be that it would be a better result than last year, which in the context of the external environment and what we've seen from some of our competitors, I think would be a good outcome.
Well, Thomas, good luck with the business plan. Obviously, these are distressing times for everybody, especially for those in business and trying to grapple with many cross industries at the same time. So good luck, and we hope to speak sooner, if not later. I was talking to Thomas Knudsen, the chief executive of Toll Group, the Australia-based logistics firm owned by Japan Post, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.